Good morning. I pray that this sermon will lift your spirits. Maybe have some ideas in there that are biblical, but that you haven't considered, but I will tell you that it has affected me, the concept, and I pray that it does you as well. Have you ever wondered why God created people? So, not out loud, but just answer to yourself right now. Why did God create people? There are hundreds of commands in the New Testament. Do you know the main reason behind every command in the Bible? You know what it is or what they are? Can you answer these two questions without hesitation? Bam, just like that. I'd like to ask you to participate, or family, but is this common knowledge? How many of you can answer number one, why did God create people, and number two, without hesitation, do you know the main reason behind every command? If you do, would you raise your hand? Because I don't know. Maybe everybody knows this, maybe few do. Either you're shy, which I don't think is the case, or humble and honest. Thank you. More importantly, or just as importantly, can your children from fifth grade and up answer these two questions? Because we should be able to answer them as though we are stating our name. My name is Mike Brenneman. Just like that, here's why God created people. And here is the reason behind every commandment that God gave us. I will tell you, I don't know when these truths came to be in my mind. I could have taken a guess, as most of you can, and some of you know the answers, I'm sure you do. But I don't know if I really knew without hesitation what the answers to why did God create us, and you know the reason behind every command, maybe for 20 years as a Christian. But I'm hoping at the end of today that Riley will know, that Casey will know, that everybody in here who's old enough to understand will know the answers to those two questions, because they will really impact our living, our mindset, every day. So we're going to talk about rules without relationships before we answer the two questions. Because this concept will drive us to the answer. But I'm going to state as a fact that rules without relationship equal rebellion. I think we can see it throughout the scriptures and in life. In 1836, almost 200 years ago, Texas declares independence from Mexico. They were given broken promises. The promises they were given were broken. The Constitution was abolished by General Santa Anna. He was an evil man. Some of you are historians, some of you are not, but Santa Anna was a rapist, a murderer. He slaughtered 300 Texans who were unarmed and in his captivity. He was a covenant breaker and just a wicked man. So he abolished the Constitution. And at this time, in 1836, Texas was part of Mexico. Thank you, Bill, very much. Appreciate that. Texas was part of Mexico. But in Texas, there were a lot of non-Hispanics living. Mexico wanted more income, more taxes, more people to settle the land. So they invited the Irish and the Germans and non-Hispanics from all over America and Europe to come settle in their land, which is a big place. It was Texas. So really appreciate that, Bill. On March 6th, who cares, right? But it was March 6th that Sam Houston was chosen by the brand new government to be the commander-in-chief of the army. He wasn't president. They had a president, but he was chosen the commander-in-chief of the Texas Army. It was very impressive. It was an army of 374 men. Most did not have guns. 2 days' worth of food, ill-equipped, poor clothing. It was anything but an army. And he was to lead them. Santa Anna claimed to be the Napoleon of the West. He had some victories. He wiped out some Texans in Goliad. On the same day that Sam Houston was appointed as commander-in-chief, March the 6th, 1836, Santa Anna overran the Alamo and slaughtered everybody inside except for two women and one slave. And he was the Napoleon of the West. And he had 5,000 to 6,000 trained soldiers now, well-equipped and trained, against less than a tenth of that in Texas. The Texans, I said, already had no food, no guns, no equipment. So the first thing that Sam Houston did, General Sam Houston did, was he started running. He got his army and all the signers of the Texas Constitution ran to Louisiana, which was owned by the United States. Sam Houston headed that way, but he didn't go into Louisiana. But his men, they didn't know anything about the army. They weren't trained soldiers. So Sam Houston is running, and as he's running, he's training his men. Some didn't see the need to understand army formations and army strategy. They wanted to fight. Oh man. His men were brave and they were eager, and fight with what? Spoons? No guns. Sam Houston kept running. Everyone hated General Houston. His men hated him so much, some left, some threatened to desert. Others, some of his own officers, threatened to mutiny, if that's the word for the army. They threatened to take over his job and cast him out. And he said, if you do, I will shoot you, because Sam Houston did have a gun. Most of them did not. He was hated so much that the president of Texas hated Sam Houston because he was a coward. He was such a coward that he wouldn't attack 5,000 well-trained armed soldiers with 374 men that weren't armed. He was so hated by the Texans that when his small army went through a town of Texas, the villagers would come outside and boo him. Can you imagine? I'm sure the pay was really good, too. It wasn't. Victory. You know what happened? Sam Houston ran for 6 weeks until April the 20th. Santa Anna got tired of chasing him, kept chasing him. But he camped about a fourth of a mile, Santa Anna did, from where Sam Houston was camped. And I know this is a long story, but it's one of the most profound examples of rules without relationship equals rebellion. So Santa Anna is a quarter of a mile away. He doesn't know how close Sam Houston is. And Santa Anna, the Napoleon of the West, the great general of Mexico, was so overconfident that he started taking afternoon siestas every day between 4 and 4:30. He was so overconfident that when he took his siesta on April the 21st, he didn't even post any guards. By now, Sam Houston has an army twice as big, and most have guns. 764 men. Santa Anna has an army twice that big. Sam Houston didn't tell his men why he was retreating, because many of his men had been, most had been, citizens of Mexico, and he was afraid they had, some of them might be spies. But he says, okay, boys, today we attack. We take our 764 men and we attack the 1,500 in the Mexican army. He begins with a shout, remember the Alamo and remember Goliad. They charged the Mexican army, caught off guard. The battle was over in 18 minutes. His men killed over 700 of the Mexican army, captured over 700, captured Santa Ana the next day. Very few escaped. It was an overwhelming, one of the greatest victories in military history. Why am I telling you this? Many of you hate history, most likely. Because Sam Houston's goals were all good. His men hated him, his country hated him, and he wanted to save Texas. He wanted to save the lives of his men from being slaughtered. And they would have been had he have immediately attacked the way his own men wanted to. He defeats Santa Ana. When Ham Houston was retreating, as I said earlier, he couldn't afford to tell his men why. He kept running, running, training, training. But he had a plan in mind. His men didn't have a relationship with him, so they hated the general. Now he became a hero and voted the president of Texas because they saw that he had good motives. Rules without relationship equals rebellion. It's true in the business world. 79% of all workers in the workforce in America who leave their job voluntarily, 79% leave for the same reason. You know what it is? They feel unappreciated. Now, I just looked up again the statistics last night to make sure it was the same. This was true when I was a small business owner in the 80s. It was a common fact that most people, by far more than 50% of the people that leave their job, leave because they don't feel appreciated. They will even leave for less money. As two Christians that Lisa and I worshiped with, wherever you are, Lisa, in our former congregation, two of them left for lower paying jobs because they felt unappreciated where they were. Rules without relationship equals rebellion. People leave in America because they don't have a relationship with the people in charge. 60% of Americans say they are more motivated by recognition than money, assuming they're above the poverty level. I mean, there's a point where you'll do anything, right, to eat and feed your family. But of those that are not in the poverty level, 60% say they're more motivated by recognition than money. I'm not one of those. Kidding. Colossians 4 says, masters, grant to your slaves justice and fairness. That's relationship. Knowing that you too have a master in heaven. They're to treat them well and recognize them and honor them and be gentle with them. Bosses, which this would stand for now, are to have relationships with their employees. It's true in families. You ever thought about this? For years I thought, what does it mean, don't provoke your children to anger? Ephesians 6:4, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. It is so easy for a father to provoke his children to anger. There are many ways you can do it. One, when you make the punishment unreasonable. They violate one of your rules. You're grounded for a month. You can't drive for 2 years. My parents love me. You'll hear it again and again. But maybe the biggest mistake my father made was telling us that no matter how good of a job we did, it was never good enough. I placed nationally twice in two different sports. But I wasn't first. It wasn't good enough. He did that because he loved me, but we didn't have conversation. We didn't have relationship. And I grew bitter because no matter what I did, I could not please my father. I was exasperated. And listen, my dad was better than many. He was a great dad in many ways. And I thank God for him. But there are many ways a father can exasperate his children, but it's much less likely to happen when we treat them with respect and appreciation. That's huge. I remember with my daughter Tamara, when she was young, and I found out that raising girls and boys are different, just like coaching girls and boys are different. That shocked me, but it's true. But when they're young, you know, hey, Tamara, I love you, you know, and do this and do that. And when she started hitting puberty, you know, her brain changed. I mean, seriously. God made women and young boys this way where they start becoming more independent. And so I would just, you know, I wouldn't yell out, but I'd give her an order and, hey, go clean your room. And you know what? That just didn't fly with her. And it wasn't necessary. She had a good heart. I learned that it was much more effective to say, hey, Tamara, I noticed your room is getting a little messy. Could you clean it up, honey? Bingo, bango. Worked much better. But rules without rebellion, rules without relationship equals rebellion in families. Now, they want to know why. So you say, do this. And all those of you kids, raise your hand. Is there anybody in here that never had a child that said, why? Because I don't know. Maybe my kids. But I think all kids, when you give the command, say, why? Sometimes they really want to know. Other times they're doing that because they don't want to do what you're saying. But listen, I remember being frustrated because I would ask my mom or my dad, good people, I would ask them why. And I don't think I was being rebellious. Maybe I was. And they would say, because I said so. And that really, really raised my anger. I want to know. I didn't tell them because I didn't talk back to my parents. But why? Why should I do that? Because I said so. So question for you. Because of the premise I'm putting forth today, that rules without relationship equals rebellion, is there ever a time to give a command without the why? Of course there is. Of course there is. You're out camping. Tamara, don't move. Come forward. Come toward me right now. A rattlesnake or something else like that. A friend of ours, Christian woman in the church in Carter Avenue. She's a fly fisherman. She's telling me she's fishing on the Burney River in California. She's fly fishing. Her husband says, don't move! Walk towards me right now! Because the falls were just, I don't know if they were 6 inches or 2 feet, but her back, you get, if you fly fish, and you should if you don't, if you fly, you just get engrossed in what you're doing. It's not boring like worm fishing. Anyway, you're looking at that fly, and, oh, I just missed him, and her back is against the waterfall. Listen, hey, did you realize that you're, 18 and a half centimeters from the edge? No, don't move! Honey, walk towards me right now. Or the children in the streets. Get out of the streets. Why? If we have a relationship with the people that we have authority over at work, at home. If we have a relationship with them and they know how much we love them and we know that everything we do is for their good. That's our goal anyway. We may mess up once in a while, but everything we do is for their good. And we have that relationship. Then when we don't give the why, they're much more likely to immediately obey us because we've told them, please, if I ever give you a command, please do so immediately. So the Bremner family, I would say, and I think Lisa would agree with me, We were great. I mean, we were tight. Our kids were well behaved. We were proud of them. We had tight bonds until they were about 12. And as they got older than that, I didn't understand what was happening. I could see that we were losing the closest. I mean, we were tight. And I could see we were losing it. We always had dinner together. Maybe there was a soccer practice, something like that, as an exception. I was blessed to coach as a head coach for 7 years. And my kids, every one of them would say, "Will you coach me this year, Dad? Can you coach my team this year?" I mean, they wanted me as their coach. We were close. But when they reached 12 and they were all good players, I wasn't good enough to be a select, I wasn't qualified anyway, to be a select soccer coach. So other people trained my kids. And select is demanding, it takes more time. And then now they're getting older, they're 12 and 13, and now they're doing a lot more homework. They went to a very challenging school. Their peers, when kids reach teenage years, their peers become a greater influence. And I'm losing them. And I can feel it. I may not have consciously been aware, but I'm losing my children. And I don't know why. And we didn't have relationship because they were really busy now and I didn't understand. You may say, "Well, you're stupid." Maybe I was, but I didn't understand the deep need that children of all ages, whether they're 50 years old or 5 months, the deep need they have for relationship with the parents. So I didn't have it, but I was correcting them all the time. And that didn't help the relationship because I wasn't reminding them how much I love them. And I could see it get worse and worse. And I didn't know what was going on by the time my oldest left the home. I started figuring it out when my second one was close to leaving the home. And I read stuff and I found out you need a relationship. Dads, you need to, take your kids out of the castle, your castle, and go to equal ground, have an ice cream cone, or even better, don't face them, but go for a walk or whatever. And just without the correction, just tell them how much you love them, how precious and how good they are, not perfect, but how good they are, because they are. They're good. And when I started doing that, I started winning my children back. But a lot of damage had been done, and one was out of the home, and it took us a long time to get that bond back with our eldest. And I learned the very hard way that rules without relationship does equal rebellion. It's true for elders. 1 Peter 5:1-3 says, "Therefore, I exhort the elders among you as your fellow elder and witness of the sufferings of Christ, and a partaker also of the glory that is to be revealed, shepherd the flock of God among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, I said so, that's why, but voluntarily." Hey, Lance, would you be willing to do, or Lane, would you be willing to do such and such? Terry, could you help us out? You're very talented in this area. Could you teach the teens? So, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but voluntarily, middle of verse 2, according to the will of God. This is what's right in God's sight. Not for sordid gain, that means not for money, but it's proper and good to pay elders. That's why it says not for sordid gain. It's biblical, 1 Timothy chapter 5, to pay elders if the church can afford that. So they don't have to spend their time in secular work. But moving on. Not for sort of gain, but with eagerness you shepherd the flock. Verse 3, nor yet as lording it over those allotted to your charge. The lording it over is, I said to do it, you do it. It doesn't matter what the reasons are. That's not good eldership. And let me say this. The reason Lisa and I placed membership here, because we don't see that. We see elders that are healthy and loving And they don't do things, put us under compulsion, but they're respectful of us. And they don't say, because I said so. But I've experienced, not often, but I even talked to one elder. And I said, man, I'd like to talk to you about something. Something bothered me. And he said, am I lording it over you? Or am I lording it over people? And I said, yeah, I think you are. I mean, he kind of knew. I didn't see a change, but we didn't stay long after that. My point is this, that this axiom, this truth, is very biblical. The rules without relationship equals rebellion. And that's why God asked elders to be examples and to show respect and honor to the members of the congregation that they have oversight over, to win their trust. And then it's easy to say, listen, Bill didn't explain this last to me. Either Bill, it doesn't matter, but I know their heart. I know they love God and I know they love us. Maybe he would have had time, he would have explained it to me, but I'm willing to do it because I trust Andrew, Bill, and Bill completely. But it's true in every realm of authority you can think of. What about with the Lord? Is he a because I told you so authoritarian? That brings us back to our first question that we will now attempt to answer. Why did God create people? And I am surprised that the answer explodes from the scriptures if we are students of it. So if you would, we're going to read from Ephesians chapter 1. And it says there, beginning in verse 4, just as he, that's the Father, just as he chose us in him, Jesus, just as God chose us in Jesus before the foundations of the world. You've heard this before, but it's saying, I thought that was mine and I knew I put it on silent. Imagine that. But it's the same tune. You must have T-Mobile. That when God and Jesus decided to make this awesome universe, before God spoke the first thing into existence, they said, we're going to create man. We're going to create human beings. We were the motivator for the creation. He chose us before he started making the world that we would be holy and blameless before him. Check out verse 5. In love, he predestined us to adoption as sons. Now, this is not gender specific. I looked up the Greek because I thought, look, it's tough translating one language, Greek, into another language, English, and the words are different. But this is not adoption as males. He predestined us to adoption as children, predestined us through Jesus Christ to himself according to the kind intention of his will. Why did he predestine us for adoption? Not servitude. That's part of our life now. See what our heart is like. But why did he make us? Because God wanted children. That's why. Karen and Lana and Sharon and Teresa. He wants children. The two closest relationships in human life are marriage. And you know about the scriptures that say that the church is the bride, that Jesus is going to marry the church, the bride of Christ, marriage. And the second is family or children. And that is what we were predestined to be. Every single human being, those that don't make it still, he created them to be his children. We read in 2 Peter chapter 3, he's long-suffering and kind and doesn't want anyone to perish. He wants every human being that he's ever made to be his child. So, imagine that. Imagine when your day comes and your life on earth ends and you're in heaven, you've just arrived, and God calls your name. Jenny. Sandy. Bill. He calls your name, and me? I'm so undeserving. And he says, yes. Come here, my child. Come here, my child. Why did God create people? He wanted relationship. He wanted family. From the beginning, before we were made, that was his goal, to have children. So when we consider some of the difficult and demanding commands that are in the Bible, some that I struggle with myself, we remind ourselves, I don't get it, but this I know, that the God who created everything loves me, and everything he does is for my good. Even the stuff that I don't understand. Why, God? Job asked him, why? Why was I born? And God never answered his question. He never answered a bunch of Job's questions. But he let Job know that he loved him and doubled his blessings. As it was pointed out in the class today, after he prayed for his friends. God created human beings because he wants family. Here's another one, Romans 8, 16 and 17. The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are children of God. Something to be children of a president or a governor, but we're children of Yahweh. Amen. And as children, heirs also. That means we get to inherit the blessings, the promises, heirs of God and fellow heirs with Christ, if indeed we suffer with him. Don't you love this verse? If indeed, so that we may also be glorified with him. God is going to glorify you. He probably does some of that now, but when we get to heaven, he's going to glorify us. I love the sermon that Larry did on heaven and how that should impact our thinking. And I hope this just builds on the case and increases your love for God and your yearning to be with him someday. What is the main reason behind every commandment? And I told you that if we have relationship with authority or with our God, that we're more likely, anyone is more likely to follow a commandment or a rule. But what is the main reason behind every commandment? And it's answered in the two greatest commandments in the Bible. Jesus says this, but it may not be the answer you're expecting. Someone asked him, teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? And he said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, all of your soul, and with all of your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. The second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets. Now, I would have answered this question, why? What's the main reason behind every command? I would have answered it something like, well, because love is the foundation of every single commandment in the Bible, Old Testament or New Testament. Every single one, thou shalt not lie, thou shalt not covet, thou shalt not have false idols before me, tell the truth in love, don't forsake the assembly of yourselves together, and on and on. Every command in the Bible has as its foundation, it's standing upon the concept of love, but that's its purpose, if I may distinguish. Love is the foundation of all command, but the reason for all commands that are, all of which are built on love, is this. Every command in the Bible, especially these two, they're built on relationship. Every command has to do with relationship. Either relationship with God, don't have false idol before me, don't take my name in vain, relationship with God, or don't covet your neighbor's stuff, tell the truth, love one another, forgive one another. Every single command that you can think of, the reason for it is to enhance and beautify our relationships. Everything in the Bible is built upon, this is a relationship manual. Duh, I don't know how long it took me to get it, but decades. A relationship manual with every command, every rule for our good, to bless us with the healthiest, best relationships we can possibly have. Amen. That's the reason for every commandment. To bless you by blessing your relationships. So why did God make people? Why did He make us? To love us and to be loved by us. The Father wants relationships. What is the main reason for every commandment? To establish and maintain the very best relationships humanly possible. This is the key. This is the only way to do that. Why did He make us? What's the reason behind commandments? To bless us. Only for our good. Let us carry that truth with us always. And please, if your children can't answer those two questions without thinking, and I couldn't when I was their age, or when I was twice their age, or three times their age, but if they cannot answer that question, make sure they can this week. Make sure your children can say, I know why God made us, because He wants me at home with Him. He wants me. He treasures me. He wants more children. Thus, another reason why we need to break out of our shell if we're in one and tell other people about Jesus, because He wants them to. But our children should be able to answer that. And the reason for every commandment is for relationships, for the best relationships we can possibly have. Thank you so much. I hope this was helpful to some anyway. That's the blessing of being a preacher. You have to think about what you're going to say, and it tends to get in your heart and make you just a little bit more joyful and happy. Because of the reason that God made people, because He wants children, no matter how old you are, that's the perfect reason to become a Christian. Today, if you've thought it through, today, if you've counted the cost and decided you're willing to make that commitment. But if not today, then soon. Think about the love of God. Think about how He only wants the best for us. And choose to become His child. So if you have a spiritual need, we're going to sing the song of invitation right now. Go ahead and stand up. If you have a spiritual need, prayer, or want to become a Christian, just come forward and let us know while we stand and sing.